Minutes Hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
It was amazing to see that many marathon runners in church at the same time. I've never seen that many tennis shoes in church ever.
Fighting for Idaho.
The pump price has not been rising for 10 weeks.
The cheapest gas, $3.29 a gallon in Salt Lake City, Utah.
The bottom line in this gasoline price hike of 9 cents is crude oil. Crude oil prices went up almost the same amount.
Fighting for you.
This wasn't an issue about guns on campus. This was an issue about the NRA and the backing for our legislatures for an election season coming up, and who's in support of pro or con gun laws. That's what it was about.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
5 after 7, Kevin Miller in the Morning. Thank you for joining us at 580 KIDO. We're joined by Laura Perkins. Laura, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Now, you're in North Carolina. What part of North Carolina are you calling us from?
I am calling from the Asheville area.
Oh, Asheville, right near the South Carolina border. Yeah, got the Biltmore States out there. A lot of good
festivals
and such.
I'm right in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Wow. Boy.
My husband drug me from the desert plains of southern Idaho and caused me to be a real traitor to my western ancestors and dragged me back east.
You've sold out to the East Coast.
I have. You wouldn't believe what these people think about us in the West out here.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we have you on today. We want to thank you for sharing your story. And the situation in Nevada sure sounds similar to what you faced here in Idaho.
We were in Nevada. I moved from Nevada to Idaho when I was a young woman and married my husband and lived there for about 15 years. But when I was in Idaho, I had the good fortune of spending a lot of time in the law library and in some of the old Western journals, and kind of developed my own sagebrush historian repertoire. And I can tell you it was scary for me at the age of 16 to be on a ranch knowing that we were being raided by the feds and that the guns were pointed at my father and my brother and the cowboys that were there. Very scary, and we all kind of sat up straight and started to pay attention to what was going on in our country about that time, because we were under the impression that we had a right to be there.
Well, for people that are not familiar with your story, and that's probably most of us here at 580KIDO, I could sit there and detail it, but you lived it. Tell us what happened when the feds raided your place, as you just discussed here. Give us some background.
Well, my parents had purchased a ranch in Central Nevada in 1978, and the owner of the place told us that he was selling the place because he was starting to develop problems with the Forest Service and BLM. My father had taken courses there at BSU when it was still a junior college, had a lot of classes that you need to be a good forester. Went into ranching and had no idea that he would have the same problem. He walked in thinking that he knew more about the Forest Service than they did and that he would be fine. So he walked into the situation and did not realize that they were intent on taking the property. They were intent on moving us off the range. And it was a battle that went on for 30 plus years. We ended up going through the appeals court process twice with the Forest Service and BLM. And we were basically told, you know, oh, you were right, they were wrong, they shouldn't have been harassing you, you're all good. And we'd start back ranching again, square one, and they finally, we knew that something had to change because they were exhausting us financially. So in 1991, they declared an invisible line and said, if this cow crosses over the line, then we're going to impound because we've declared this a non-use. The entire time, my parents were scratching their head and saying, wait a minute, don't we own this? Don't we own this right to be here? They had purchased the ranch, and they were very clear that they had signed title documents. And yet the entire time, the government kept saying, no, this is our land, and we get to decide what happens on it. So Dad and Mom and the rest of us all spent quite a bit of time in the law library trying to figure out who owned what. In 1991, they rallied support in Congress, which is a little sad story in the history of the United States of America, in my opinion, that you could a federal agency could go to Congress and convince 30 members that it would be okay to do a SWAT raid on a ranch in the middle of Nevada, and that's what they did. We had to sell all of our cattle after that. If there was an imaginary line the cow couldn't cross, then clearly we had to get off the range or we would lose everything. So we turned around and decided that the only way we could get this in court to decide who owned what was to get before a court that would actually recognize the property. So we sued on the basis that we owned it and they were taking it and they had to compensate. It was a major taking suit. And for 23 years, we've still been litigating that question. What we do have is, at this point, a finding of fact and that establishes what law establishes property and what property is ours. And I can tell you the Bundy situation is just too familiar because Bundy is sitting on the same kind of water and grazing rights that we are sitting on.
Laura Perkins with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. So you and your family are going back and forth in court with the Fed. Why do the feds want your land?
Oh, I would love to know the answer to that question. That is the biggest conundrum, I think, for all of us, is why? Why are they trying to do this? We know they've been doing it for years. We know that they were, they were doing it in the 70s. I think the 70s is when you really saw a shift where the government stopped recognizing rights and started to, you know, deliberately cloud title and claim the land and say it was going to be theirs. We don't know. We know that water is very, very valuable. And if you want to look at who owns the water in Nevada, you're looking at 90% of the people are probably ranchers. They're sitting on gold mines, I'm assuming, and they don't know it. But the easiest way to understand this, and I think the real reason that it's such a problem and people don't quite know what side to land on is there's a confusion as to how the West was settled and what really defined property. Mr. Bundy's in a problem right now because some people say he has to pay grazing fees and some people say no, he doesn't have to pay any grazing fees. And what I can tell you is that the origin of the grazing fee system is really what clears it up for you. As people settled west, they settled on the water. There was no rain coming down, so they had to figure out how to use the land with the water that was there. And instead of going to the courthouse and declaring their, you know, little square foot, 640 acres or 160 acres or 720, whatever it was in that area, they would settle on the water first. And if they could establish a patent, they would on their square footage. But for the most part, they settled on water, and then the prior appropriation doctrine kicked in. Whoever could use the water was the one who could claim the water, and they could claim all the land that was attached to it. But because you were moving into country where there was multiple ways to use the land, they settled off after a pattern of that was established in Mexican land law, where you have multiple people settling on the land and using different things. One guy would settle and log, and one guy would settle and, you know, use the land for mining, and another guy would be settling and using the land for grazing. And those uses were all very compatible, despite the fact that not one person owned one thing. Exclusively. They owned the right to use exclusively, but they didn't own that plot of land exclusively. So as the Western states came into being, you know, when you got enough people settled in the land, you could become a state. And the sovereignty of that land then transferred to the state of Nevada or state of Idaho, whichever Western state was taking over at that point. And the laws that were put on the books in that state were the laws that defined what the property would be. In the state of Nevada, Nevada was very clear that the water was what you settled on first. Well, these ranches would settle on their little 640 acres or 160 acres, whatever plot they'd settled on, establish their water, and then they'd proceed to graze the cattle out to other waters. It was really the best way to use the land. And as they did that, they were establishing their water right and their grazing right. When the grazing fee system came to be, it came to be because everybody was running their cattle in common, and it was time to basically define whose area was whose and build fences and kind of separate the allotments up. So the land office through the Department of Interior and what later became the BLM, started to adjudicate those lands. They conversed with the state water engineer to decide who was on the water and who had a historical use of the water and how many cows were on that range. They developed a system called AUMs to determine what the carrying capacity of the land was to prevent people from, you know, inadvertently or deliberately stacking their cattle herds to get more land. They went and developed a system of calculating the carrying capacity of the land to determine what was a reasonable amount that a person could carry on that land with the water that they owned. When they established those allotments, they were establishing the boundaries of those persons' water rights and then by extension grazing rights. So everywhere you see a grazing allotment in Nevada or Idaho or Arizona or New Mexico, what you see is an adjudicated property right attached to the water.
Laura, let me jump in here for people just tuning in. Laura Perkins, our guest here at 580 KIDO, talking about what's going on with the BLM in Nevada. Of course, her family's experience with this, a 30-year fight, a 23-year court battle, determining who owns the water, who owns the land. And what we've learned is apparently 30 congressmen, the BLM can go to 30 congressmen and declare that your land isn't your land anymore.
It was a little scary to find out that the administration could gain that much power that quick. Obviously have some sort of motive to be out there and get a hold of people's of these ranchers' land. Of course, I look very closely at Harry Reid because he's knee-deep in the middle of the issue down there in Clark County. We already know that he and his good friend Harvey Whitmire have used the BLM to push other ranchers off. Bundy was one of 52 ranchers. He was the last man standing. And
they pushed off 52 ranchers.
There's a development called Coyote Springs that you might want to look into, that the BLM was very key in moving the rancher that was on that area off so that Harry Reid and his good buddy could capitalize on that water on Coyote Springs.
Laura, please stand by. We'd want to take some calls and get more information. And then I'd like to get the information where apparently the Fed stormed the compound, your ranch.
Well, it wasn't a compound. They stormed a little canyon called Meadow Canyon, and it was a scary day.
We'll talk more about that here at 580 KIDO. Laura Perkins joining us from Asheville, North Carolina. We've lost her to the east. Hopefully we can get her back, but detailing the story of her family's struggle, their fight to keep their land, which appears to be a Western problem. Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get you to work safely.
KIDO is having its 85th anniversary, and we're giving you the presents. Keep listening to find out how you can win $1,000 in cash on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Laura Perkins, our guest. So, Laura, let's talk about the agents showing up where you lived to try and take your land. What happened?
We were first visited by a reporter who showed up at the ranch. Everybody was kind of curious as to why he was there. He wanted to do an interview with Dad and wanted to know what was going on with us and the federal government. And we proceeded to ask questions and found out that he had been tipped off that there was something that was going to happen today, but you know, he didn't know how or when, but he wanted to be there to cover it. And since we thought we were the most unimportant people in the world, we were a little bit shocked to find out that somebody was intending to make us a headline. So up to that point, we had had a little bit of press calling us bad ranchers and that we needed to get off the land. They had taken pictures of the land in the fall after the first frost. I don't know if you can imagine what a beautiful meadow looks like after the first frost, but they took those pictures back to Washington that spring and had everybody convinced that we needed to get off the land. This had been just a culminating moment with us, because up to that point we knew that we owned something out there, but we weren't quite sure how to defend it. We certainly couldn't defend it in the appeals process because the government would not even acknowledge that we had a right to be there. So the reporter tells us something's getting ready to happen, and then the head of the Forest Service showed up, and he, with a couple of others, wanted to talk to Dad, and so Dad jumps in the truck and he takes off. And I remember thinking to myself, gee, the cowboys are up in Meadow Canyon where they said they were going to take the cattle, and Dad's in his truck, or in the truck with this major, major guy from Washington. And what are we going to do here at the ranch? Are they going to raid the ranch? So we were very concerned. I believe at the time it was just my mother and I on the ranch, at the ranch house. And then my young brother and the cowboys were up in the canyon, and Dad was nowhere to be found. Later on that day, we got a massive, tearing in of the cowboys coming into the ranch. And their eyes were as wide as saucers. They had all had guns pointed at them. They were taking the cattle. They were teasing the cattle with their dogs. They were, of course, you know, when you do cowboys for hire, you never get the right ones. So they were abusing the cattle, and it looked like what they were trying to do was provoke a fight. I was very fortunate that in my family we kind of knew not to respond to those kind of things. So Dad proceeded to take pictures. And when he showed up and they had the cattle, he proceeded to take pictures of everybody. They were all packing. There were about 10 agents that were packing guns. And they were letting it be known that if we attempted to fight in any way, shape, or form, we would be tarred and feathered in the press. And it would be known that we were the most horrible ranchers on earth, and they had a right to come in and take our cattle. They sold them illegally through a BLM auction and violated several state laws doing it. And we were out of business. That was the end of that.
Amazing. How fearful were you for your life, for your family?
A young teenager, I was, I think up to that point, I kind of understood that they could do whatever they want to us. I mean, they were winning the battle in the press. They were winning in court. We were pretty much surrounded by people who believed we didn't have a right to be there. And that is scary. I mean, you grow up thinking it's me against the world. And I know for me, it affected me greatly. I really had to come to terms with the amount of fear that I carried with me after that, later on. I think I was in my 30s before I finally just faced the music and realized that I had let that moment define a great deal of my life. I feel so bad for the Bundys, and I'm so heartwarmed that so many people have come out and supported them. I didn't have snipers pointing at me. I didn't have 200 armed agents, and I didn't have somebody tasing me every time I looked out the window to see what was going on. So the Bundys have really had, you know, something. If I thought what happened to us was bad, the Bundys have really gone through it. I'm very pleased with the American people for supporting them.
Let's go to Elizabeth in Eagle at 580 KIDO. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Kevin. First of all, I want to thank you for having Laura on the program. This is very helpful. I think a lot of people listening in may not realize that Laura's name was Hage before it was Perkins, and people will remember that what you're talking about is a famous Wayne Hage case. And those of us who remember Helen Chenoweth Hage know that Helen helped fight this battle, too. And, Laura, I was wondering if you would talk to him about what Judge Jones said and the fact that you've actually won a lawsuit, not collected a penny, and that the government is so arrogant that they say they're not going to, they're just going to keep it tied up until you run out of money. But I think the Jones case was really powerful.
That was a very important decision. By the way, Helen was very important to helping us survive all those years. She didn't know us from Adam, but when she heard about our situation, she went to the House floor of the United States Congress and put certain illegal activities into the congressional record. She was the first person inside of politics and outside of politics to put her career on the line to defend us. So my family had great admiration for Helen long before we got to know her. And thank you, Idaho, for sending such a great representative to Congress, because she sure helped us. Just a side note, they had decided to fraudulently remove the loan from the ranch. They were doing a deal with the, I believe it was the National Wildlife Federation, was putting pressure on Cigna, and they were going to pull out our loan on the ranch, which would effectively have ended the case forever. But what happened was we went through and are still in litigation with Judge Smith in the takings court. And when he came down and ordered that we had an inheritable right to use the land and that that range was ours to use for cattle grazing with the water, we proceeded to turn around and go back to business. We put as few cattle as we owned at the time back out on the range. The government had canceled all our permits, so we proceeded to operate knowing that if we weren't in the permit, we didn't have to deal with the harassment and the regulation on the part of the government. Well, they came along and filed a trespass against us and sued us for trespass on federal land. And that became the Judge Jones case. And Judge Jones ruled that what he saw as a pattern and practice of the feds, at my brother at the time, on what they did to my brother, shocked the conscience. He could not believe the amount of harassment and witness intimidation and fraudulent activities that the government was actively doing against us to defraud us of the land. And his judgment also verified that we had an inheritable right to be out there, that we owned the water, and therefore had right to use the land through the water, and that wasn't something that anybody could take away.
Okay, Laura, we're going to ask you to stand by for a moment. Can you hang on for a minute?
Yes.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you, and thank you for helping us with this.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, Laura Perkins, our guest. We will talk more about the feds and the treatment of Laura's family, also how it relates to what's going on in Nevada. Your phone calls welcome. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
In the name of protecting an endangered tortoise in the region, the feds kicked Cliven Bundy off public land his family's used for cattle grazing for generations.
They want unlimited power over the people of the United States.
Kittleany was a cowboy down to the core.
I challenged their authority.
He just wanted his ranch and he wanted more.
And their policing power and their arresting power.
I never ever dreamed he'd be starting over.
Our freedoms are on the edge of being taken away from us.
Storm over the range, man.
Back up!
He up next to me.
Back up!
Storm over the range, man.
Kevin Miller here, 580KIDO. Our guest, Laura Perkins, talking about her struggles with the feds, her family's fight for their land. And, you know, I just go back to the idea that you had these 30 federal agents going into your home. What was their attitude?
You don't dare show any kind of attitude at all when you're up against these folks. You submit real fast or they're going to come after you and look for an excuse to throw you in jail. The entitlement on the part of these, and you have to understand these are BLM folks. These aren't like trained police officers. They're BLM folks that have gone through like a couple weeks training to be so-called law enforcement officers. And they're some of the more dangerous people out there. You're looking at people who haven't been vetted, properly for law enforcement. They're certainly not peacekeepers. As the Old West used to hire peacekeepers to keep the people in peace, not necessarily rile them up over the law. And in this case, they don't even go in with legal warrants or court orders. They just show up at your door and start taking what they want. So as a citizen on the other side of it, you really have nothing protecting you unless you happen to have a very gutsy sheriff, because that sheriff can turn around and tell them that they have to go through him and they have to show up with legal warrants, as happened finally in Nye County, Nevada, when a new sheriff came into town. Sheriff Tony DeMeo took one look at what they were doing and said, well, you don't have a legal warrant. You can't come in here and start taking cattle and harassing the family anymore. You need legal due process. You need to follow due process. And so he was the one who kind of caused a reprieve for us. The harassment essentially came to an end, at least within that valley.
How was your brother harassed?
Well, he was harassed in a hugely scary way. In order to survive, he was working with other people who had cattle to feed, and he was grazing other people's cattle that would, you know, basically sell them to him for the duration of the grazing period, and then he would sell them back to him after they were ready for sale to go to market. And so the government, the BLM and the Forest Service, I believe this was mostly the BLM, but they worked. You have to understand they'd already filed a lawsuit against us and said we were trespassing out there. And they, while this was under the aegis of the court, under the jurisdiction of the court, they proceeded to go around and threaten federal prosecution of any of those people who were doing business with Wayne. And when Judge Jones saw this, he was mortified that not only had he been offended, his jurisdiction was offended, and that they tried to find their own remedy around him. They couldn't sue us and then harass us at the same time, he said. They had to pick one or the other. Not only was he offended by that, but he was offended that they would use the intimidation of the United States government on innocent citizens to run us off the place.
Let's go to Daryl in Canyon County at 580 KIDO. Daryl, thanks for your patience.
Hey, good morning there, Kevin.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, I had taken a class from a Margaret Bayfield. Her parents were Wayne and Jean Hage. They filed a Hage versus United States in federal court, and I understand they had a victory, a Fifth Amendment victory on property owners. She also was part of that. Remember they used to call it the NAFTA Superhighway?
Yes.
It got changed to the Texas Super Corridor or the I-35 Trans-Texas Corridor. She was fundamental in helping defeat that also. So she went through what she was telling us in the class that we went through, that they went through quite a bit, even cutting down a little sapling tree and being charged for harvesting wood. But anyway, she's been pretty successful in fighting these people. She might be someone to get a hold of.
All right, Daryl, thank you for the call. We go to Alan in Eagle at 580 KIDO. Hello, Alan.
Hello. Yes, the reason I'm calling in is that it just so happened that my wife and I were down in the Las Vegas area on business during the time of the Bundy incident. And since we happened to know the Hages, we thought, well, we would swing by up into the Mesquite area. As soon as we entered the area, of course, that automatically made us domestic terrorists, you understand. But on our way back from the Mesquite Ranch area, heading back home, we ran across the in the back highway, we ended up going across, coming up on a what looked like a waste treatment plant, very sophisticated, or a water plant, looked very sophisticated, lots of infrastructure. Just beyond that, we saw what looked like a real estate development that never got underway. It was, the entire infrastructure was put on, not a house on it. And we ran up to the sign at the entrance, and it said Coyote Springs. And I think Laura mentioned something about that early in the program, and I just wondered if she could speak to that.
All right, Alan, thank you for the call. Laura?
Well, I wish I knew more, but I know that there's a very sordid history with Coyote Springs. The BLM was used as the agent to get the rancher off the land, and then the water was transferred over to this gentleman by the name of Harvey Whitmire out of Clark County, who happens to be a very, very important business friend of Harry Reid's. And anybody who knows very much about Harry Reid knows that if there's a land deal in Clark County, he's got his hands in it. What's kind of scary about that was that the BLM was used as the agent to get those ranchers off the land, despite the fact that the ranchers had the water in their name, or I should say, had the inheritable chain of title to their name, and they had a prior existing right to be there with the grazing. I think one of the things that's been a problem is people think that the grazing fee is just this little tiny contract that you have with the government, but the grazing fee was paid in the beginning simply to help pay for the fences that were going to defend, that were going to define the boundaries of the allotments. It's a great misfortune of all Western states that the BLM stayed after the adjudication of the range happened, because they've been able to successfully convince hundreds and thousands of ranchers that they're only renting that land, and they're not. They were there to begin with because they had a right to be there under the state laws that established those states.
Laura, please stand by. More coming up with Laura. We'll take a couple more phone calls as we continue to talk about the West, the land versus the feds. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to
Sean Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Back to Laura Perkins. Let's take some more phone calls. We go to Tom Munns. Tom Munns, you're on 580 KIDO.
Good morning, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call this morning, and God bless all your tireless efforts out there. The question I have is simple. Why didn't the government just slap a lien on the property?
They can't, because Bundy has a right to be there. His right isn't because he just showed up and said, I want to be a rancher. His right is protected under Nevada law. He owns those grazing allotments. They can't come after him because legally they can't get a judge to sign that.
So it's government by force now.
Yes. And you know, I don't want to get into the legalities of his case specifically because I don't know how he pled his case. I did notice they used language. He used language that wouldn't stand up in a court of law. He used the public lands language, and public land is a term that has a legal definition in law. It means land with no rights attached. And clearly there isn't a piece of land in the West that has no rights attached. Somebody has a right-of-way across a, you know, somebody has right-of-ways or easement rights in the case of grazing or logging. Somebody owns that water, and that immediately says that it's no longer open for anybody to settle. It's only open for certain usages to settle.
Can you bring something home for most of us, and that is that how it affects us,
for those that can't
understand what you're saying?
Yeah. First of all, we all have to be scratching our head asking, how do you prevent a SWAT raid from coming down on you if the government decides to put their sights on you? And the first thing I would encourage everybody in Idaho to do is start looking at what kind of power your local sheriff has. In Nevada, the local sheriff has a full, he has full powers, and he's the highest law enforcement person on that land. He is the person who has to constitutionally ensure due process for you. So in the case of Tony DeMeo down there in Knight County, he basically said, do you have a legal warrant signed by a judge? And they said, no, we just have this, you know, little piece of paper signed by some bureaucrat. And he said, well, that's not going to work in my county. You can't violate these people's constitutional rights. So the first thing Idahoans can do is start paying attention to that and be very careful to elect sheriffs that are interested in protecting the people.
Good point, Laura. I'm sorry, Laura. Thank you, Tom, for the call. What was the second point quickly? We're just short on time.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Very quickly, I would just say there is a movement to take the sheriff out of the power of the people. There's a movement to keep people from, or to transfer it to a appointed position instead of elected position, and I would recommend every Idahoan to fight that tooth and nail.
Okay, we're going to go to traffic, then we're going to get to Jim and Star with Laura here at 580KIDO. Quickly to Jim and Star at 580KIDO with Laura Perkins.
Hey, Millie, great show. Hey, Laura, thanks so much for doing what you're doing. You're very articulate, and you're explaining it to people that need to hear what is actually going on. And I just want to say that if people don't wake up to what's happening, look, you obviously know what happens. They keep coming in. They take more and more. And where do the people that work for BLM, that's the angle I wanted to throw out at you. How do these people do their job and do it with good conscience, knowing that what they're doing isn't right?
All right, Jim, thank you for the call. If you can catch it on the other side. Laura, you've got 40 seconds.
I don't want to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. The last person I heard talk about that said that they need to be analyzed by a professional in psychology. So I don't want to go there. It is very scary to suggest that, you know, fellow Americans are willing to draw on fellow Americans. So thank God for that militia to showing up, because they were the only ones that put another gun in the midst that would say, I don't think you better pull a trigger on these Bundys.
In about 10 seconds, how do you see this playing out between the BLM and Bundy?
Oh, well, I think the BLM is going to sue Bundy again. And I think Bundy's going to have a lot of legal advice so that he can outright win this time.
Laura, we appreciate it. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO. Serving Emmett,